shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Phil Hendry Show. This is a world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. We're a news, talk, and entertainment show. And I say entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows continually tell us they wish they could, but they can't. So it is left to us. Good evening and welcome. And we're on in the middle of the night in some of the markets that we are heard, and very, very late in others, because we pursue things into the night. And that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to have on Dr. Ron Tarner, and he'll be talking with us about a project that he's involved in, along with a friend of his fiancée, Elise Haddock, Dr. Haddock, and he responding to, again, this tragedy in Florida. This is topping the news, folks, and there's no real getting away from it. I'm not saying that it's an out of control state of affairs. I think when you look at what has happened, there's been some pretty intelligent and an adult response to this. The police chief has stepped down, Bill Lee. There is a federal investigation going on, and today there was a rally in Florida, and there was one as well in New York. For there was actually what they called a Million Hoodie March in New York, but there was a rally in Florida, in Sanford, Florida. And one of the sentiments that was clear here, according to AP, was that the thousands who rallied Thursday night for action in last month's fatal shooting of an unarmed Florida teenager wanted justice. And the civil rights leader, Al Sharpton, helped lead the charge, demanding the arrest of Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman in the death of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. So with that in mind, also just one extra note here news-wise, the rally came the same day, and that is today, folks, that we're talking about. So I know that a lot of you are listening to us on a Friday morning back east. We're still talking where I am about it being Thursday. It was Police Chief Bill Lee stepping down today temporarily, he said, to help quell the rising passions surrounding this story. And one individual who's taken a interest in this is Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. And he joins us on our newsmaker line tonight. Good to have you, Ron, and good of you to join us. It's not an issue that necessarily we think of when we think of some of the things we've talked with you about, science. But you're a citizen, and so many scientists have involved themselves in social matters over the years.
Phil, that is exactly correct. Here at the state of Colorado, I, along with a great many members of the scientific watchdog committees and the scientific council here in the state of Colorado, we've weighed in on all manner of issues, from the legalization of marijuana to the rulings on habeas corpus and the Patriot Act, even locally here, to issues involving immigrant rights. I've been front and center. You mentioned Dr. Haddock. She's been a longtime friend of mine and associate, and we are engaged to be married. And we both were very moved, you know, by the events in Florida.
To your way of looking at this, it looks like the justice is going to, the wheels of justice are turning. The federal government has involved itself. The state of Florida's governor, Rick Scott, has aggressively pursued that himself. And so it seems that the wheels of justice are turning. Does it seem that way to you?
We believe that from the standpoint, Phil, of getting to the bottom of what happened out there, I think that there is as you said, I think there is good momentum. But what I don't think is happening is enough discussion about these self-appointed vigilantes that you and I both know, because I live in a community, and I heard last evening you were discussing gated communities with one or two of your guests. I don't live in a gated community, but I still live in a community that has a homeowners association, and we do have these self-appointed busybodies who are leaving flyers in the mailbox. They will knock on the door and tell you about your garage door being up. I think that's probably one of the most popular complaints of a lot of these homeowners associations.
You know, I had a condominium up until about 3 or 4 years ago before we moved out to the beach here, and that was if there was one thing that I kept getting phone calls and knocks on the doors about, it was the open garage door.
Right. And really, what all it is it's unsightly. They're not talking about it being something that is necessarily unsafe. You have that. So you've got the people who are bothering you about your garage door. And, Phil, I don't want to say that neighbors being good neighbors is a bad thing.
No, not at all.
No, I appreciate my neighbors telling me things of importance. But when it becomes a constant intrusion, and you have these people that think that if they don't do it, then the whole place is going to fall apart. And now we have what happened in Florida. And that is the living end, if you want to put it in as easy a way as you can. That's the end. And so that's when Dr. Haddock and I decided on this statement, which is really about our home, our personhood. We will not be disrupted in living our lives.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about this. Now, you live in a gated community. We're not in a gated community. You live in a community. We don't want to tell anybody where it is. But there is a homeowners association. It's near Denver, right?
Yeah. I live about 15 minutes north of Denver. And I was approached by one of my neighbors, Jeremy Kitten, who asked me about my garage door being open. And this is one of the individuals I mentioned. So what we did today and yesterday, we may extend it into tomorrow, was a very, very extreme statement. And before I tell you what it was, I want your audience to understand, this is how strongly we feel about these nosy, busybody people who at their very extreme are this guy, George Zimmerman.
Okay.
And so we had to make an extreme statement. It was myself, Dr. Haddock, and one of our guests from the university, Dr. Melton, and we were both in the front yard of my home. I have a quarter acre, which is a flat quarter acre. It's a good size yard.
It's very good size.
Yeah, and so the only statement that could be made, and again, what you're trying to say is, this is where I live. This is who I am. And I don't care if you're a police officer or you're just a neighborhood watch vigilante, you will not cross this line. And the statement had to be made in a very extreme way.
All right, so tell us what you did. I mean,
what we basically did is disrobed, and
you were nude.
We had no clothing on. Yes, we were naked. In the front yard, I was doing some yard work. Elizabeth was doing the same thing and doing some moving some plants into pots. And Dr. Melton was in the house, but the three of us had no clothes on. Now, that is a pretty
extreme statement, as well as a provocative statement. In other words, you were looking for a reaction, weren't you?
No, we were not. Now that's wrong, Phil.
Well, because when I read this, my first thought was you wanted a reaction, you wanted a confrontation.
No, that is a misreading of it, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know how a reasonable person could come to that conclusion. I'll tell you why. Knowing what the news has been, even if you see someone in on their own property, let me underline that, our own property, and I have no clothes on, you can't really say anything to me because I'm on my own property. And that creates a situation for the busybody neighborhood vigilante who thinks that he's going to tell you when your garage door is open and when this is happening, that is happening. Now, Jeremy Kitten is a guy in our neighborhood.
This is the second time you mentioned this guy. Who is he?
He is one of these, I don't want to call him a neighborhood watch captain. I don't know that we have that per se, but he is a block captain of some kind. I call him what I call him, I can't say on the air, but Elizabeth could probably tell you what I call him, but he's a busybody.
Okay.
And he asked us to put our clothes on, and I said to him, you're aware of what's happening in Florida, aren't you, Jeremy? He said, to some extent I am. I said, well, I guess what? When you read a newspaper and when you get educated on what's happening to our young people, what's happening to our homes, what's happening to our freedoms, what's happening to our privacy at the hands of these self-appointed vigilantes and these neighborhood watch people. When you finally educate yourself on that, that's when I put on a pair of pants. But I'm not going to do it until then.
And was there a confrontation of some kind? Because I understand...
He called the police. The police came out. At that point, I made my point and decided, retire the field and claim victory, which is what we did.
So you went back in the house and put on some clothes.
Yes, but we're going to be back out there tomorrow, and we will be out there for as long as these vigilantes think they can run my life and the lives of so many Americans with their little vigilante patrols rolling around the streets of quiet neighborhoods, pulling guns on innocent people and taking lives. Well, if that's what they get to do, then we will protest that in admittedly an extreme manner, but nonetheless, I think, articulate manner. I will remove my clothing and stand on my property and see what they think about that.
All right, Dr. Ron Turner is with us. Doctor, hang on.
I certainly will, Phil.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL. So there is Dr. Ron Turner. As all over the country, people are responding to what this terrible event in Florida meant. Some people believe it's a matter having to do with race relations. Some people believe it's a matter having to do with police. In the case of Dr. Turner, it's an issue that he has with the self-appointed vigilante neighborhood watch guy. And he and his fiance have responded by trying to provoke something between themselves and their neighborhood watch captain, disrobing and standing in their own yard and on their own property to see what happens. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show here, and we'll be right back. Don't forget, philhenryshow.com as well.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
We did that, huh?
Oh, we did. As the police talk to us.
Welcome back here. We're on the line with Dr. Ron Turner, and we're discussing with him the issue of vigilante neighborhood watch people. People, the busybodies in the neighborhood. People that are constantly... And I don't know how prevalent that is, you know?
Well, first of all, Phil, it's more prevalent than you might think. And it happens in every neighborhood. You don't have to be part of a homeowners association. This happens in every neighborhood where there's one or two people who are looking at all the cars driving down the street, are looking at strange people that they may think are strange. It could be a relative of yours. It could be a person who is a. It could be someone who is a friend of yours. It could be an individual who is a workmate of yours, but these people will be taking notes, calling the police, and so forth. So my sense is that the only way to do battle with them, and now ultimately they killed a young man.
And well, they killed this man, George Zimmerman.
George Zimmerman was the trigger, but the neighborhood watch groups across America are the ones that killed this boy.
How can you say that? I mean, that's a pretty extreme statement. Most neighborhood watch groups are simply there to protect.
I'm sure that they have all kinds of wonderful things to say about themselves, but look what the neighborhood watch program has done. It's resulted in this. And I am now saying, I'm turning it around, and I'm saying, if that's what you think you're going to do, then I am going to make a statement, and that is, I'm on my own property, I'm not wearing any clothes, which is, as you said, Phil, is very provocative.
Yeah, it's provocative. And you had the police come out there, didn't you?
I didn't know. Mr. Kitten called them.
Okay. And what did they say?
Well, when they came out, we had our clothes on. And Kitten tried telling them that we had been naked, and I said, well, No, we weren't. And apparently he had taken pictures. And so the police officer said, well, what are these? And I said, all right, we were naked, but we're not naked now. And
well, was that the plan? In other words, to harass this man, Kenton?
Yeah, it was to make the statement to these neighborhood watch people that your time is past, that you have pushed your way around the neighborhoods of America, that you've been sticking your nose into people's private business long enough, that you have been meddling in affairs that are none of your business, that you have used the homeowners associations to empower you, and now we've got at least one death, and I don't know, maybe more.
877, maybe more, I doubt it. I doubt that.
Well, what is that supposed to mean? I doubt that.
Well, I seriously doubt that with the neighborhood watches of America, people that are just banding together to make sure that creeps aren't in the neighborhood, I don't know that we've got a whole lot of guns being wielded out there. I could be wrong.
Well, I'm here to tell you that you are wrong, because one of the things that we found out yesterday and today, when I stripped and went into my yard, was there is a very high level of anger. And Mr. Kent himself, while I did not see, obviously I didn't see a gun, but I wouldn't doubt it if he was going to go into a yard, go and get a gun and come onto my yard. You remember the shotgun killing of that man in Houston?
Well, I remember they were two guys that were burglarizing a house, okay, and that man came out of his house, and he saw them, and he killed these men, correct?
No, I don't remember anything about burglarizing a house. It was two African-American men who happened to be minding their own business, and some old white man, came out of his house and loaded up two barrels and emptied both of them into these guys. And
no, that's not the case.
Well, then you're reading a different news story than me.
No, I'm not. The story in Houston was...
So if you're making an argument in defense of these people that just wield guns in an irresponsible way...
No, I'm not. I'm making a defense in favor of getting the story right. The story was, because I remember the story, I've even got the audio. This man saw out his window individuals that I believe had been inside of a house, had been ransacking a house or otherwise had burgled a house, I don't know what, but they'd been in the house. Now, I'm not defending this guy.
Well, you most certainly are.
No, I am not. I'm just telling you what the facts of this case were, that these guys came outside. Now, the guy, the dispatcher told him, don't you do anything. Stay in your house. We're rolling police officers. They're going to be there. This guy, I remember him saying distinctly, I'm going to get my shotgun. I'm on my way out the door.
Well, I do remember that. But what you're missing is he killed two men in cold blood who happened to just be taking a walk and taking the afternoon air.
Oh, no, they weren't. No, they weren't. You got that wrong. 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445 is the world-famous Phil Henry Show's. We're talking about vigilante justice and the destructive nature of it sometimes when individuals involved are not responsible. And really that's what we're discussing, because there's a difference. There was that guy in Houston who was not adhering to the instructions of the dispatcher, but these two guys were in point of fact criminals. There's the guy here in Sanford, Florida, who just was completely off his ass. And everything in between. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to go over to Vernon in Glendale this evening. Vernon, how are you? Welcome to the Phil Henry Show. You're on the line here with Dr. Ron Turner.
Yeah, Phil. I've got Dr. Turner. I've spoken with you before.
Yes, sir.
And I'm an educator in California.
Yes, sir.
When you say that you're taking your clothes off, you're going outside and you're stripping. You said that you have your girlfriend or your fiance.
Yes, I do.
Do you not at all? Are you concerned, sir, about her safety?
In what way?
The fact that she's a female.
I told her, as I tell you, Elise is a friend of mine. She's my fiance. I love her. But if she's going to be in my life, she has to be a part of my life all the way. When I told her that we were going to make this statement about being our own people, and I said that I was going to disrobe and that I wanted her to do the same, and Jim Belt would be here too, I meant it.
So you told, is this something that makes she has to do, Otherwise, you're not engaged.
It's something that I told her I wanted her to do as part of our engagement.
I've got a lot more questions, sir.
All right, hang on the line, Vernon. We'll be back with you and Dr. Ron Tarner. 877-876-7445, The Phil Hendry Show, talking about vigilantes and are they out of control? Are neighborhood watch groups out of control? And are you a member of one, and do you agree or disagree? It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back after these announcements. PhilHendryShow.com.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. You know, Bud, you can put people on hold. Put that on hold for a minute. You hear how nosy that... Noisy. Did you hear that?
Yeah, but you get everybody ready.
You can get everybody ready to get on the air, but we don't need to have the noise from their phones. We'll get back. We have one caller hanging on here with Dr. Ron Tarner from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado, as we discuss the neighborhood vigilante, the neighborhood watch, the sort of the self-appointed posse. You know the types. And are they frustrated cops? Are they guys that tried to join the force and they didn't pass the psych test? Are they guys that tried to join the force, made it, and then were injured? What are we talking about here when we talk about these guys? We have Dr. Ron Tarner on the line with us here from Mountain Meadow, and we also have a caller on the line, Vernon. And, Vernon, you were asking the doctor a question, and we had to take a break. I don't know. What is that behind you there?
That's some kind of a car alarm, Phil.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, no. I mean, I was just asking Dr. Tarner that you have a fiancé, and you have insisted that she, I guess, disrobe with you. Is that it?
I have insisted. That is a personal matter between myself and her.
I'm not trying to pry. I just wanted to know the
I think any woman that is going to spend her life with a man, or vice versa, you're going to be interested in what they're interested in. You're going to want to commit yourself to what they are committed to. And so I've asked Elise, and we have Dr. Belton helping us, that when we do this yesterday and today, basically disrobing and spending the day in the front yard or the backyard of our home with no clothes on, is to make a statement to these vigilantes like Jeremy Kitten, some of the others in our neighborhood, that we will not be bowed. We will continue each day to remove our clothes, to live our lives, to be the people that we want to be, and we're not going to work. We're not going to be in fear any longer, which I think is the most important message.
Right. But I think what you're not, what you didn't hear me is.
It, no, I think I heard you.
No. What you didn't hear me is you have your woman, your fiance, and she. Had,
you know that car alarm. Is there a way you can move somewhere else?
I can't move anywhere else, Mr. Henry. I'm out on the street here. I'm waiting for my own wife to get out of a show. I came to pick her up. And it's someone's car alarm.
It is very distracting.
I'm sorry, but...
Go ahead.
I'm here on the street, for instance, doctor, and I'm waiting for my wife. And I would never let my wife walk to a car alone. I would never let her...
I would never let my wife do that.
No, but you've got her naked out on a street.
She's not naked out on the street, sir. She's making a statement, a political statement.
Did you say she's doing yard work?
Yes, she's doing yard work.
Well, if you're doing yard work, there's a fair amount of bending over that you're doing. And there is a...
Well, you know, let's get to it here. Are you saying that you sure wish you lived next door to me?
No, I didn't say that at all.
There's no point in insulting the guy.
No, but he's insulting me. Talking about my girlfriend bending over. Look,
well, you also have another man there, so there's two of you and one of her. And I could, if I were a neighborhood individual or neighborhood watch individual, however you want to put it, that's exactly what I would be thinking. Is this is a very weird and very it's a very disturbing situation with you and another man, and you're all hanging out together there in the yard. you know, doing what, I don't know. I mean, doing laundry or doing yard work or...
Well, we're not all doing laundry or yard work or hanging out in the yard. We're, you know, she's doing yard work. I'm sitting in a chair, and so is Dr. Belton. And
what are you doing sitting in the chair?
Well, you know what? That's none of your business. You know?
Well, no, wait. This is a fair question. What are you doing? You're sitting. Are you? You said you're trying to provoke a confrontation, correct?
Yeah. You're trying to provoke people.
We are wearing sandals. We have on socks. We are naked, and we're wearing straw hats. And we chose that wardrobe because we knew it would be provocative.
Yeah, and I can tell because that's exactly how French tourists dress, who are who don't wear clothing.
Exactly.
So you do want to create a some sort of a confrontation.
All right, now hold on for a minute because you're losing me. You guys, you were out there, Dr. Tarner, naked in your yard, dressed like a French tourist.
No, President.
This is how French tourists.
Excuse me, I can do it if you don't mind.
I was just going to tell them this is how French tourists dress.
I'll do it. When French tourists come to the United States or any other country and they insist on taking their clothes off, they do it in such a way so as to irritate even the most liberal American. In the case of the French, the men will wear sandals with socks, completely nude all the way to the top of their head, and then a big straw hat. Now, that would irritate the most liberal and supportive American. Supportive, I say, of public nudity.
And yeah, as you describe it,
it bothers you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, if I saw a guy dressed like that, I'd want to kick his ass. I don't know why.
Well, and I would, too, but and I'm very liberal.
All right, hold on for a minute, because I've got Jay Santos on the line. He's a member of the Citizens Auxiliary Police in Southern California. Now, we had him on the phone here not too long ago, like two nights ago. And, Jay, you are hearing what people are saying here, right?
I am, Phil, and it is a very sobering and very disturbing conversation you're having.
Who's this gentleman?
My name is Jay Santos, one of Citizens Auxiliary Police.
All right, I've heard you, Mr. Sand. Mr. Santos.
Jay Santos.
Mr. Santos, I've heard you on this program before, and I've heard you. You're the epitome of what we're talking about, a guy that pushes his weight around, muscles everybody.
And I don't believe we've had the pleasure.
No, sir, we have not. My name is Jay Santos. I'm with the Citizens Auxiliary Police. To the point the gentleman just made, I did not muscle nobody.
You don't muscle nobody. Where are you from?
Excuse me? I come from Torrance, California.
All right, well, are you
I'm not a vegetarian.
No, he was going to say a vegetarian.
You know, Phil...
Can we grow up a little bit here? That was uncalled for.
I apologize.
All right, and I heard what the gentleman said. And I think that what you're saying, sir, is essentially this. Every time someone brings up the fact that a man is nude, they become infantile. This Dr. Tarner, who said he wanted to provoke a confrontation in his own yard, you're naked, you're on your own property, and yet you know that at some point, if I live in your neighborhood, I got to look at that.
What do you mean you got to look at that?
I have to look at you, I have to look at your girlfriend, I have to look at your friend, this Dr. Melton, who I find that to be very weird. Very weird.
And what is weird about this? Excuse me for just a minute.
Well, come on, we got to move on.
No, hold on. What is weird about that?
The fact that you're sitting in your yard and your girlfriend, and here's this guy Melton. He's like an X factor.
Dr. Melton is a research fellow at the University of Denver.
Okay, so he's a fellow.
No, he's a research fellow. He's a friend of mine.
But I think what Mr. Sanderson is saying, or not, I'm sorry, excuse me, Santos is saying.
His name is Santos.
Right. I think what he's saying is that there's a missing link here. You got this guy Melton. The two of you are sitting in folding chairs with no clothes. Your girlfriend's in the backyard bending over and planting things.
Yeah, I'll bet. She's not the only one planting things.
How dare you?
Well, you walked right into it, sir.
Okay, let's grow up.
No, I didn't walk into anything. How dare you?
Well, sir, I was asking because I wanted to know if your girlfriend, I'll say it, is Melton planning something.
Okay, you know something?
That was uncalled for, but it was funny.
Thank you.
No, it wasn't funny and it wasn't called for. And I find, Mr. Henry, this is the kind of program that you're doing.
Hold on for a minute, because Mr. Santos had called the program wanting to draw some kind of an analogy. And I'm not exactly sure what the analogy was. I'm not exactly sure if it was anything that it was anything anybody was going to understand. But you were saying that one bad apple.
That is exactly right, Mr. Henry. And that's what we were trying to say to the news media today. One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch. And if you were looking at Neighborhood Watch or you're looking at Citizens Auxiliary Police.
Oh, brother.
Well, you can say old brother if you want to, sir.
Well, we say one bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch. I have news for you.
May I finish, please?
Sir, I have news for you that one bad apple did spoil the bunch.
May I finish, please?
Go ahead, but I agree with the doctor that you got a bad apple out in Florida, and everything stinks from that one apple. Every apple is now fetid, rank, corrosive, and rotten.
Can I finish?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm only talking to just keep it from being dead air. Be right there, Mr. Henry.
Let me handle that. Go ahead and finish.
One bad apple is a very simple concept, which means you do not judge everyone on actions of one bad apple. That was why I had play that song, Mr. Henry. Do you have that? Or? There it is, yeah.
This is the song that Mr. Santos had asked you to get, bud.
Yeah, it's called One Bad Apple Don't Spoil Your Bunch.
Can you gentlemen hear this? Can you hear this, sir?
Yes, I can hear it.
And what about this, the other guy, this Dozier, whatever your name is?
My name is Vernon Dozier, sir. I'm a high school teacher. I'm not out with a pith helmet and walking around in my bare feet or whatever you do.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can hear it. Oh, jeez.
Well, you can say what you want, but this is a song that...
All right, we don't need to hear the whole song, do we?
Yeah, we gotta hear it.
Get out of here, bud. Who's asking you?
Mr. Henry, first of all, can we have a little bit of respect for the Mormon faith? Because these are individuals who are members of the Church of the Latter-day... Of the Church of the... I'm sorry. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day.
Of Latter-day Saints.
Is that what it is?
Yes, sir.
You know, we've completely lost the topic here. What we were discussing. Will you turn that down, bud, please?
Mr. Henry, Mike, no. One bad apple, don't spoil it. Here it is here.
Why does everything got to come down to a song with you? And there's a few... Oh.
Right there. Oh! Don't give up on me, see? Everything...
All right, we're going to take a break and get this show under control or just walk out tonight, man. Unreal. We'll be right back. 877-876-7445. Should all neighborhood watch groups be judged basic? Should all neighborhood watch groups be judged on the basis of one guy, this Zimmerman, and his horrific acts? 877-877. I'm going to kick your ass, bud.
Sorry.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Man, I don't want to hear that again.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, 877-876-PHIL, the neighborhood vigilante, and what they represent to us is what our discussion is about here tonight. And I do appreciate the gentlemen calling in, Mr. Dozier and Mr. Santos, but we are talking to our guest now, Dr. Ron Tarner, about his action.
You call it an action, but I think it was a act of profanity to strip down and then try to provoke people by wearing sandals and a hat.
Well, you know,
look, hold on for a minute, Dr. Turner. Mr. Dozier, I thank you. Mr. Santos, are you there? Mr. Santos.
I'm not here now. I didn't hang up, but I wanted the illusion to be that I hung up. Because I stopped talking a long time ago.
What is that supposed to mean?
I'm not even talking to you.
Okay, so you're gone, right?
I'm gone, yes.
Bye.
But I didn't mean literally.
And,
I'm not a doctor. I'm a...
Okay, Dr. Turner, you're there?
Yes, I'm right here, Phil. And may I say, I appreciate you having me on your program, but you have very little control, it sounds, over your callers.
No, I happen to know both of those men. They're newsmakers, they're contributors, and that's why I wanted them to talk, one of them being a Citizens Auxiliary Police guy. 877-876-7445. Margaret Gray also joining us here from Santa Monica in a moment to talk a little bit about this. What do you got, bud?
Yeah, Mr. Grover.
And we had Mrs. Grover on here last night, so I don't know the purpose of this.
Well, I know this Larry Grover's mother. I know her. And the only reason why I know her is because I've done some, did some seminars with seniors and some senior work out in California last summer.
Okay, let's get her on the line. Ms. Grover, how are you, dear?
Oh, hi, Phil. How are you?
Good.
Oh, I'm listening to, Ron, how are you?
Mrs. Grover, I'm wonderful. It's great to speak with you. And how is your son?
Well, Larry is Larry. There's no rhyme or reason to him. And
you're still having a problem with him, huh?
Well, he's sexually inactive, and
well, that's not why we're talking here tonight.
No, I understand that, Phil. I'm sorry, but Ron and I had talked about Larry from last summer, right, Ron?
We had, yeah, and I had talked about maybe introducing him to my sister.
Yeah, and I guess.
We don't need to discuss that right now because we're in the middle of a whole other discussion. And I know that, Mrs. Grover, you have been a homeowner there in Culver City, and you and your husband, before he passed on, both of you members of a homeowners association there.
We were members, Phil. When Dean died, which is Larry's father, and I obviously took over the house and the mortgage and everything. And Larry has been very angry because he's not on the title to the house and will not be on the title to the house until 7 years after my death.
Why is that, if you don't mind me asking you?
Well, the reason for that, Ron, is Larry needs to prove his manhood. So even though he's a man in his 40s, he's going to have to wait 7 years.
You're going to make him wait? Who owns the house?
It's going to be left to my sister.
Is she the same age as you?
Yes, and she could very well die the same year as me, which means the house goes to the state.
But you'd rather it go to the state than to Larry?
Yes, absolutely. Now, this ties in, Phil, because Larry was our neighborhood watch captain here for a number of years when he first moved in with me. And because of the psychological issues involved with Larry not being on title to the house, the psychological issues with Larry losing, you know, Marcy leaving with the girls, and all of those, Larry became very aggressive as our block captain. He roughed up a couple of Mexican kids, and he was, you know, canvassing door to door for McCain at the time. And I said to him, Larry, you can't do that.
All right. So just to kind of cut through to the chase here.
I am cutting through to the chase.
No, you're not. I mean, so Larry was out of control.
No, he was doing what we wanted him to do.
You wanted him to go out there and rough up Mexicans.
At the time, we felt it would keep him off the street, figuratively. It would keep him out of our hair. But then he began taking it very seriously, and he wanted to join the Minutemen and this kind of thing.
I don't understand this at all. So you felt that him going out and bothering a bunch of strangers in the neighborhood was a good thing?
Well, I can understand if you felt that he psychologically needed that.
Yes, he did, because he was bothering us. But once McCain was elected, McCain was defeated, and we no longer had any need for, Larry's political activities. I just told Larry to stop doing what he was doing, go back to his conservative Kern County.
So he's out there roughing up Mexicans?
Yes, at my direction.
Well, that's racist.
No, it's not, Phil. I needed him. It was either that or he was going to be in the house here spying on me while I was taking a bath.
Oh, my God.
That's right. And
So why is it that he is walking around and he's not in jail, your son?
I've tried many times to have Larry turn himself in.
Turn himself in? I'm talking about why don't you have him arrested?
I can't do that, Phil. If I had Larry arrested, and incarcerated. That means he's going to eventually try to break out. And if he breaks out, then the neighborhood, everyone, myself included, no one's safe.
You know, I don't know what the relationship is between you and your son and what's happened to his mind ever since he lost his wife and his daughters and all this stuff, but I think he needs a doctor.
You know, I don't know anything about this guy you're talking about. I know what you've told me, dear.
But my son.
No, I know that, but...
The guy is crackers, and thank you very much, Mrs. Grover, but I got to keep on keeping on here, okay?
What does that mean?
It means I got to get off of this dopey topic about your son, and let's start moving on to talking about vigilantes.
Why don't you blow it out?
You see what I'm saying right there?
What did she say to you?
She was going to tell me to blow it out my you-know-what. There's something wrong with that whole family. Ron Tarner, thank you, sir, for being with us on our hour here as we discuss neighborhood vigilantes, whether they are good, whether they are bad. Are you going to be naked tomorrow?
We will be naked tomorrow, Phil, starting at 10. I will have no clothes on until 4 or 5. We'll go in and have supper, and then we will return out until about 8 o'clock, whenever it gets dark. And we will have no clothes on, and Jeremy Kitten and all the other neighborhood vigilantes could come out and try to tell me to put on some underwear, and it'll be interesting to see whether you actually get me to slip into a pair of, you know...
Underwear.
Yeah.
All right, thanks very much, Ron.
Phil.
Whatever.
We'll be right back.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. So with the backstage pass, you have exclusive access to Phil TV in HD, high-definition coverage of our radio show. So in other words, you can not only listen to the show, you can watch the show performed every night on Phil TV in HD. And as well, when you go to our website, you can access, with a backstage pass, over a decade's worth of full shows in our archives. We also have character clips. We've got our free classic fills. We've got our rants, our video rants and audio rants. Lots of stuff happening there. Our webisodes. It's all there at philhendryshow.com, plus our news feed for you to comment on. So join us with a backstage pass and check out our souvenir shop. Anybody can go into the souvenir shop and pick up a bit of Phil Hendry there, man. We've got our hats, the Bobby Dooley keychains now.
You're wearing a hoodie, too.
Yeah, and if you're watching our Phil TV, you guys see me wearing my hoodie. Now, this has got nothing to do with the million hoodie march, although I guess it could.
You're trying to be all politically correct.
I'm not trying to be politically correct. What does that mean, politically? I'm wearing the hoodie, to be honest with you, just like last night. I didn't have a clean shirt. So I got on my Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie, and you can pick this up, too, at philhendryshow.com in the shop. All right. Couple of things happening. One, a tour is about to commence, believe it or not, featuring two seminal, legendary bands from the halcyon days of rock and roll in the 70s and early 80s. And I speak specifically of Motley Crue and Kiss. The understanding here is that these bands will tour together, and that is going to be happening very, very soon, perhaps this summer. And the enthusiasm for a tour like this is running quite rife through a lot of people, especially people who are in their 40s, maybe even late 30s or early 50s to some degree, people who were big, big fans of the bands back in the day. It's an interesting bit of demographica that I was in my late 20s, I guess, I was in my 20s when Kiss started, but Kiss was always a band for, when I was around in the 70s, a band for 15, 16-year-old boys. Stephen Bozell is a construction contractor and a father of two and a husband in Corona, California, and he joins us on our Newsmaker line tonight to talk about, the memories of Motley Crue, Kiss, and your plans on going out and watching them on tour, Steve.
I've had a lot of plans, and I'm hoping that those plans will come true. I'm hoping that they will.
And I hear you are either out in a field somewhere or you're indoors. It sounds like there's a machine there.
No, that's where I am, is a pond that we have on our property. It's just off the back of our our home here. I've got an acre, and I've come over here, and I've many times I want to be here by the pond.
Was there something that occurred today or something that happened within the last few days that has put a bit of a crimp in your plans to go out and watch these two bands? I understand you were going to go with friends.
Well, I think you put it very well. I mean, when you said that these two groups, along with other groups from that era, Scorpions, another group, Rats, another group, you know, Cinderella, and Kiss, you know, Blue Oyster Cult. These are bands that, yes, I was a high school student in the late 1970s, and so I wanted to see these groups, and I did. Went and saw the Theater of Pain tour of Motley Crue,
uh-huh.
And the Girls, Girls, Girls tour of Motley Crue, and the plan was for us to go out and see these bands again.
Now, you're saying the plan was, you were going to go out with some friends?
Yes, sir, I was going to go out with two friends. One of them's a neighbor of mine, another one's a man that I work with.
Are you not going out now?
The reason why the plan's been put on hold is because of a dispute that is currently that has currently arisen between myself and a member of my family. It has to do with personal possessions. It has to do with history. It has to do with a respect for history. And we've had a very traumatic a few hours. I'd say the last day and a half.
Can you tell me what that's about?
Yes, sir. It has to do with the destruction of private property.
The destruction of your property?
Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, without me guessing, can you tell me who the family member is? It's your is it not your wife, April?
Yes, sir, it is.
Tell the audience.
Well, I had a number of articles, personal possessions of mine, that while it is true, you know, you have community property, and I understand that we got married, but I actually had these items before I married my wife. And
Were they items from watching these two bands?
Yes, sir. One of them was, actually I had two T-shirts from the Girls tour. I had some T-shirts, and I had a bandana from the Kiss tours. All of these were taken by my wife at some point in the last year or so, as best as I can find out, and these were all either put up for sale at a garage sale or given to Goodwill or something.
Did you ever tell her that these were really important shirts?
I did. That's a question. My wife... You know, if my wife loves me and knows that I love Motley Crue and Kiss, and it was a part of my life, why would she then take the T-shirts and sell them on wherever, eBay? I don't know what she did with them, and get rid of them. Why would she do that? You know.
All right, but well, okay. I mean, I don't know how the two of you communicate. I guess what I'm asking is, was it something your wife knew? That these articles of clothing, these souvenirs were important?
Yes, sir. I would say that it was something my wife knew. And I would say that she looked at these articles of clothing knowing that these souvenirs were meaningful to me, and she went ahead and took them and gave them away
to a what, sir?
She just gave them away to people. She gave them away to people. So I.
All right, but you have basically, you're sort of kind of dancing around this, Steve, if I could. Your wife knows that you love Motley Crue.
No, sir, I'm not dancing around anything.
Your wife knows you like Motley Crue. Your wife knows that you like Kiss, but she went ahead and gave these T-shirts away or gave these souvenirs away. So I'm wondering, did she know that you liked them to the extent that you were holding on to these T-shirts? Did she know that you liked them to the extent that you would be upset?
Well, I had the T-shirts, and I had them for over almost 30 years, so I don't think it takes much of a brain surgeon to understand that I wanted these T-shirts, and she went ahead and got rid of them. So that became a situation where when you ask me, am I still going on the tour? And the answer to your question is going to have to probably be at some point a no, because I have, you know, I can't bring myself to do what I wanted to do.
Well, you wanted to go out on tour with the Motley Crue t-shirts and the Kiss t-shirts that you had. Your wife gave them away. And so you now can't go out and follow the bands like you were going to.
Not the way that I wanted to. And not in the sense that I was a part of that historic event. Now, when I said to my, but that's only part of it. When I said to my wife that he has now ruined the summer for me because I can't go out and follow these bands like I normally do, or not, I normally would, because these T-shirts are gone. And then she stood, and with my daughter and my son present in the kitchen that morning, and she sort of shrugged her shoulders and laughed as if it was just. I was so upset with her that I went out into the garage and I broke all of the fishing rods that I had.
You went out and just destroyed a bunch of stuff.
Yes, sir. And I said to her, I said, you know, I said a lot of things to her.
Well, Steve, you know, this is taking me by surprise, because I thought you were going to go on this. You and your friends were going to go by car and follow the Kiss Motley Crue tour.
Yes, we were.
But now that your wife has given away these souvenir T-shirts that you had, you're not going to.
I am so angry at this betrayal that I had contacted my attorney, Dolores Blazek, game in Riverside, to see what can be done about having my wife pay restitution. And
but okay, can you really do that?
Yes, I can. I could compel my wife to take a job and to earn enough money to pay me back for the sentimental value of those T-shirts.
Are you, if you got the T-shirts back, you got the money back, would you still go out on tour?
If I could be assured that my wife was going to reimburse me the cost of those, the sentimental value of those T-shirts, which in my opinion goes into hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars, because of the age of those shirts, and I could be assured that my wife is going to restore the money to me, then I would consider going back with my friends, Mr. Hutch and Mr. Pettigrew, and go out and follow Motley Crue and Kiss. At this point.
So you're going to sue your own wife?
Yes, sir. I'm going to have a court enjoin her to pay me back for T-shirts that she one day, because she's just stupid. She's just stupid.
All right, Steve, hang on the line here. 877-876-7445. I think you've talked to us once before where you were going to sue your wife or your...
No, I've never sued my wife. I considered suing my daughter for a situation having to do with a pet.
All right, take a break here, Steve. Hang on. Take a deep breath. Grab yourself a glass of water, something. So this guy was going to go on the tour, and now he's not going to, bud?
I guess not.
Because I wanted to talk to him about following Motley Crue and Kiss out on tour as they commence a tour, I believe, for the summer. Mr. Steven Bozell, whose wife got rid of all of his old Motley Crue and Kiss T-shirts, and now he's considering a legal action against her to have her pay to restore those shirts or pay him the equal amount in money. 877-876-7445. Wow. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Here on the line with me is Steven Bozell from Corona, California. The tour that is planned for, I believe, this summer, Motley Crue and Kiss, that Mr. Bozell felt compelled to basically follow, along with a couple of friends of his, is not one that may be in the offing after all for him and his friends, because your wife gave away Motley Crue and Kiss T-shirts that you'd had since how old?
The first Kiss T-shirt I got, I was 17 years old, and then the Motley Crue T-shirt I got, I was 18 or 19.
And so these T-shirts are gone, and this has caused you to consider some kind of legal action.
Only because because of my roots, Mr. Henry, in Knoxville, Tennessee, I'm not saying that I am proud of this at all, but I was raised by a father who was not a very open-minded man, and I've done a lot of work on myself to try to open my mind up, try to open up my life, but I still suffer from some of the, I guess you call prejudice, that my father taught me, you know.
Okay.
And my wife had given these or sold these T-shirts to Mexicans.
All right, so your wife sold or gave these T-shirts away to Mexicans, did you say?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's get Dave on the line then, okay?
Yeah, Dave can't.
All right, Dave Oliva joining us here. Dave is a student from L.A. Canyon College, and David is also studying to be a police officer, eventually trying to get to the LAPD Police Academy. Dave, how are you?
You sir, I'm doing good.
And do you know Mr. Bozell?
I've just been listening to what he's been saying tonight, you know, and it's pretty interesting, you know.
Yes, sir. I hope you understand that I'm not trying to say anything personal.
Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Bozell. I've been, you know, my whole life, obviously, I'm Hispanic, but I've also was raised, you know, by parents who tried to tell me that to get a good education, you know, is the best way to do it, you know?
Your parents are very wise.
Okay. Someday I want to be LAPD, you know. But when I heard you say that your wife gave these T-shirts away to Mexicans, I've got to ask you, what's your problem, you know?
It's only because I was raised to be prejudiced, you know.
Right, but if you're raised to be prejudiced, you can get rid of the prejudice.
Yeah, I can, and I try to consciously do that. But every now and again, it just comes back up again. And
was it like your father? You said your father treated you to be a prejudice?
Yes, sir. My father and my mother, both they both were prejudiced people.
Did they use all the N-words and all that stuff?
Well, yeah, they did. But you have to understand, it was just kind of the way it was.
No, I understand. I understand when you're a little boy, there's nothing you can do about it, you know. But now that you've become an adult.
Yeah, but you see, I just had a very basic, visceral action. When I heard my wife had given these T-shirts away to Mexicans, I just went, oh, man, why?
Tell me, what was your reaction when she said that?
What?
What was your reaction when your wife said she had given the had she given them away or sold them?
I think she gave them away. I think there's the Mexican come up and said, you know, can I use this? I think what made it hurt was that some Mexican, excuse me for saying this, came over and said, can I use this to wipe up? He needed to wipe something down.
Oh, so in other words, she gave your Motley Crue T-shirt to a Hispanic, to a Latino, to wipe up something?
Yeah, I think he had to wipe. And that's the part that hurt. When I heard that, it hurt bad. So I said to her, why did you do that?
Okay, well, hold on for a minute. So, in other words, your wife, you know, she did this thing and gave away your Motley Crue T-shirt. Now, here's what I want to ask you. Can't you change your mind to say, well, you know what, I'm not going to be prejudiced no more?
I mean, I guess it's easier said than done, huh?
It's easier said than done, because when I think of a Mexican wearing my Motley Crue T-shirt, man,
That really bothers you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Well, I mean, look, you know, at some point you have to get rid of these prejudices because this is what your father taught you, and it's ignorant, you know?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
For you, you say you're getting all upset, you know, thinking about a Mexican wearing your Motley Crue T-shirt. Hey, you know something? I get upset when I see, like, my sister is dating some Anglo guy. I get upset with that, you know, but I got to live with it.
Are you prejudiced?
Well, I'm not prejudiced to the point where it's, you know, like I'm thinking about it day and night. You know, I just have to go on with it. But the fact that you, you know.
Is this the whole crux of the matter here, that your wife gave your T-shirts away to a Mexican?
The fact that she gave them away, yeah.
Well, if she had sold them?
Yeah, she got fair market value for them.
But what if she gave them to a Anglo?
What if she did what?
What if your wife gave the Motley Crue or the Kiss T-shirts to an Anglo?
You want me to be honest?
Yeah, be honest. It wouldn't bother you.
It probably would be okay.
Boy.
Well, I'm being honest. Well, you're going to be angry with me for that?
No, I mean...
Well, I didn't know that it ran that deep in you, Steve.
Well, I'm just trying to be honest with you so you'll understand why I've taken legal action against my own wife and why it means so much that I'm missing out on them.
Now, like you're missing out on Motley Crue. Like, you know, I'm not old enough to remember these groups. I mean, I know their music, you know. I like some of their music. It's okay, you know. But, man, I'll tell you something. You've got to learn to, like, live with life and live life, you know, to the fullest, you know, without letting all this stuff get you hung up, you know.
Well, I mean, it's not like it bothers me all the time. It's just when she said to me, I don't have your T-shirts. I said, where are they? She says, I gave them or I sold them off. I said to who? She said, to some wandering, you know, she said it was a Mexican that wandered.
She said it was a Mexican that did what?
Wandered?
No, wandered by.
Your wife sold them to the wandering Mexican, huh?
Okay, sir, I mean...
That's what I'm asking you.
Okay, that's essentially what your problem is. And you're just going to have to live with that. And you're going to have to, like the gentleman says, you're going to have to just get over it.
Well, I'll get over it when my wife makes restitution.
Well, you know, it's too bad your wife didn't give those to some Anglo guys. You wouldn't care at all. You know, you'd probably make your own Motley Crue T-shirt, a Kiss T-shirt, go out on the tour with them by yourself, and it wouldn't be no thing.
Well, as it is right now, I'm going to have to go by myself because if both Pettigrew and Hutchins have started out, I'm a good week and a half behind him, so I'm going to be going into these concert halls all by myself looking like a big ass.
You're going to look like a doofus all by yourself, man.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Well, good luck with that. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much, Dave.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, this guy's a real douchebag.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. News and information coming up.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show. Boy, what a night. But we'll be back tomorrow night. We're still here tonight. It's been pretty weird, though.
Yeah, pretty weird people talking about, you know, like stuff with Ron Turner and his no pants on and everything.
Come on, man. You got to talk like you're not disabled, man.
What's he saying to me?
All right, well, just take it easy. When you want to say something, bud, just say it. And don't go, because it sounds to us like you're...
Well, I'm just trying to formulate to what I'm going to say.
What do you mean formulate?
Shut up.
You're making him nervous, Robert, when you're talking to him like that, okay? You mean you're trying to formulate or to formalize. Is that what you're trying to do?
I don't know. Just tell him to shut up.
I'm just trying to find out what people want. You ain't saying nothing, man. You're just sitting there going, boop, 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 boop.
Take it easy. All right, 877-876-7445. Here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show, David G. Hall is checking in from where? Is he in Pasadena tonight?
Yeah, he's having dinner. I think he's having dinner somewhere.
David, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm calling in because I've been listening here. Hold on for a minute. Hey, come here for a minute. Will you give me another basket of bread, okay?
Yes, sir.
And give me a... you want to get... Okay, and get us the, we want the Calistoga Springs water.
Yes, Calistoga Springs, we want the...
Get the Pellegrino water.
Calistoga or Pellegrino?
I want the Pellegrino, right?
You want bubbles or sans gas?
What does that mean, sans gas?
David, are you there?
Hold on. Yeah. So I want a basket of bread... The lobster bisque.
Oh, God.
What's he doing?
He's ordering a dinner.
What do you want, baby? Okay. And she wants that shrimp cocktail, whatever that is.
Yes, sir.
Get the Pellegrino.
Yes, sir.
And I want Jameson's on the rocks, two fingers.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Phil, I'm sorry.
We're on the air, and I'm waiting for you to order, and I could have hung up the phone.
I'm sorry. I was in the middle of ordering dinner.
Then what are you calling me for on the air?
I didn't know Bud would put me right on the air. I wanted to talk to you. I didn't know all of a sudden you guys are pulling me up on the air.
You know that we're at the end of a segment. We go into a break, and then we come back. When you call, you know that that's what's going on.
Excuse me. I mean, all I was trying to do was order dinner. I called Bud. I said, I want to talk to Phil. He put me on hold.
Yeah, and then at the beginning of the segment, we put you up.
All right. I mean, I'm this guy that's waiting the table tonight. He's flouncing around the place. I don't know.
Did you get your dinner ordered?
Yeah, I got my dinner ordered. Look, all I wanted to say to you, and to be perfectly honest, I'm just going with what you said to me once, which is, if I have serious concerns, I can call, and you'll put me on the air.
Yes, here we go again.
What does that mean, here we go again?
Well, I didn't know that you would take full advantage of that. Every week I got a phone call from you.
Hey, Phil, hold on for a minute. What are you all upset for?
Because I'm sitting here waiting for you to get on the phone and start talking to me.
Right.
And in the meantime, there you are with, I'll have the Clams Casino. Or...
I didn't get Clams Casino. I got Lobster Bisque.
Whatever, man. And, yeah, the Calistoga Springs. No, I'll have the Pellegrino. And what do you want, baby? And
she's my date. You know,
are you on the phone right now talking to me while she's sitting there?
She's having a ball. She's buttering up the bread. You like that? She's putting butter on the bread. She's looking at the people. Everything's good.
So what can I do for you, David?
Look, Phil, the only reason why I'm calling is I'm listening to these guests you got, and I think you're stiffing it. I mean, you are stiffing it bad. And
which ones?
The ones you're having on. Which ones? The ones you had on tonight.
All right, we had on...
Hold on, because I wrote it down. Where's that slip of paper? Where's that napkin? Where'd you put the napkin? Oh, you naughty girl. Hold on for a minute, Phil. You put it in your... Okay. I can do it from memory. You had on this Ron Tarner, right?
Dr. Tarner.
Right. And this guy is going on about how he strips naked.
He's getting naked to force a confrontation with his neighborhood watch people. That is because of what's going on in Florida.
Yeah, I heard eventually you got around to making the connection. But here's a guy that's taking his clothes off to force a confrontation with the neighborhood watch people. His wife, his friend...
His fiancé.
Well, whatever, his fiancé. I mean, that guy sounded crackers. And then you had on that Jay Santos, and you had on that Vernon Dozier. All three of those guys sounded like they belonged in a nut house. All three of them.
I thought that what we were... With the three of them, we had Mr. Dozier was the caller. He's an educator. And then we had Jay Santos, who is with the Citizens Auxiliary Police.
I know who he is. He's out of his mind. He's been on your program a million times. He's completely out of his mind. You know the guy I'm talking about?
Yes, I know the guy you're talking about. I just had him on tonight.
That guy's nuts. I don't know, you've had him on. I don't know how many times. The guy's walking around with a pith helmet on, and he's got on whatever the hell, wingtips. I've heard this guy talking about the kookiest stuff, and then he's stopping girls to find out if they bought the right kind of underwear, and you got that guy on as a representative of Neighborhood Watch. Okay, so that's number one. Then comes this guy, Bozell. Now, I've heard this guy before, too, this crybaby. And he comes on talking about his Motley Crue T-shirts.
Right, which I thought was a very interesting topic, given the fact...
That's fine, okay. Well, it's whether it's interesting or not. But he starts talking about his wife selling these things, and he sounds like he's going to start to cry. Then he starts talking about he's going to sue her. And then on top of everything else comes this Oliva, and now the truth comes out. The guy's upset because his wife sold his T-shirts to Mexicans. This is what you call a night of entertainment? I'm telling you right now, Phil, it was the weirdest night of radio I've ever heard in my life. And you're not even half over with the show. Well?
What do you mean, well? What does well mean?
I just wanted to know what you know. Oh, wait, hold on, Phil. Thank you, sweetheart. I found the napkin. Now... You know, sir.
We already went through it. You don't have to look at your napkin now. I put these guys on because, first of all, the Motley Crue and Kiss tour, that's a big tour. That's going to be a huge event for that generation, for those Gen Xers who were coming of age during those, you know, the hairband days and before a little bit. And then I had on the Dr. Tarner because he's very motivated about this vigilante thing.
Well, he may be motivated, but this thing has got more to do with this situation in Florida. It's very explosive. And some guy carrying a gun, someone's dead. You got a whole bunch of people walking in the streets of New York and Sanford, and along comes this guy that you put on the air, and this is your relevant take on it. The guy's taking his pants off and hanging out in his front yard. This is his statement of solidarity. And then what was this thing? I want to ask you a question, and I'm serious. What's this thing about the guy got nude in a way that pisses off Americans?
He got nude. He looked like a French guy.
Well, what's that supposed to mean?
In other words...
Hold on for what? Oh, okay. She told me.
Who's she?
My date, okay? She said that you said... Were you listening to this? She said that you guys were saying that the French strip in a way that's offensive to Americans. I'd like to know what that is.
They wear their sandals and their socks.
Yeah.
And they wear a straw hat on top of their head.
Right.
And then they're nude.
Boy, that would piss me off.
There you go. And that's what Dr. Turner was doing. He was dressed that way in his front yard.
What's that got to do, though, with the kid in Florida?
It was all about neighborhood vigilante, neighborhood watch, about what a pain in the ass all these people are, how these people are, they got their little power base, and they're trying to push their little power base around the neighborhood, and they're trying to tell everybody what to do, and, you know, the whole question as to whether, you know, these people are out of control was being raised.
So, in other words, to raise the question of whether neighborhood watch people are out of control... You got a guy who is stripped a lot. And then the other thing I heard was his fiancée is nude in the backyard. She's bending over, pulling weeds. And there's another scientist sitting there watching this.
I don't know that I heard that.
Well, I did. This guy Turner's in his front yard in his sandals and a straw hat. In the backyard is his fiancée. She's pulling weeds, nude. And there's another doctor, a guy by the name of Melton. Is that his name?
Yeah.
And he's sitting in a chair, looking her up and down while she's bending over pulling weeds. Now, what is that? What possible connection to reality does any of that have? That's not what I'm saying then, right?
Yeah, I you put it that way.
If I put it that way, that's the way everybody heard it. That's the way everybody heard it.
Can I ask you a question?
What?
Are you sitting in a restaurant screaming at the top of your lungs?
You better believe it. You better believe it. I eat in this restaurant every week. I own this place. Folsom Market in Pasadena. I love it. And I can scream and I can yell and I can throw food. You want to know why? Because I tip good. I always tip good. Yeah, you go ahead and go to the can, honey. So she's gone to the bathroom. All right, look. So.
Well, you know, never mind.
What?
I don't know. I just the way you're talking to this woman that you're with.
My mother.
That's your mother?
Yeah.
Well, what's this baby stuff? And she's going to the can. And where did you stick the napkin?
I don't know. And what you're talking about? I take my mother out to dinner once a week.
She sounds like some bimbo.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, I didn't know. All I'm trying to tell you is that you've made your point.
Okay. So in other words, what you put on the air tonight, I don't know, man. I don't know where it's from. I don't know what planet you got these people from, but I would suggest you get them back on their flying saucer and get them home, because, you know, midnight's coming up on the West Coast.
I get it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to bum you out. My mom's coming back. I got to get off the phone. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Phil, I love you. You're great. You're one of the great talents in America. You're one of the great talents of all time. Everybody knows that. But tonight, you suck. See you later, okay?
Well, just remember that. I mean, it's, you know, you're one of the great talents and one of the great, but tonight you blow.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's just, you know, one of those things, man.
Just one of those things. One of the great talents in America. But tonight I happen to blow.
Well, don't get all angry and PO'd about it.
Hey, what is it with you, man? Are you Porky Pig or something?
What do you mean? Ha, ha, ha. Porky Pig, man. That's exactly what you sound like. What are you talking about?
Because you go, bee, bee, bee. You sound like freaking Porky Pig.
That brand's name isn't Pork Pig.
His name ain't Pork Pig, man. It's Porky Pig. And you sound just like him. You go, bee, 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 bee. That's all, folks.
What's that mean?
Go ahead and do that, bud, will you?
Yeah. Do what?
Go, bee, 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 bee. That's all, folks.
Just like him.
Just kidding around. All right, we'll be right back. 877-876 Phil, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth
Nuts.
Is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Look at this thing. That's all I'm saying here. Just want to look at one more thing here. All right. So, in other words, what I'm looking at is.
See what I'm saying?
I am seeing the numbers. Just hold on for a minute, folks. It's my trainer.
Did you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's 339 calories.
It's 339 calories. It's remarkable considering your weight.
Right. Okay, thank you, Benji.
Yep.
That guy's name is Benji?
Yeah, he's been helping out. 339 calories for a Starbucks.
Wait. That guy's name is Benji?
Yes, just relax. 339 calories in a Starbucks Venti Latte with whole milk. And I drink two of those a day.
Yeah, but you drink a triple shot, too.
Well, it's not the caffeine, man. The caffeine's got nothing to do with it. I can drink a triple shot of coffee. But, dude, I've been putting back 339 calories times two. You know, it's almost 700 calories in just coffees from Starbucks every day. And sometimes I have three. So the first thing I got to do. So today, that was my last. See this one here? God, man, I mean, I'm going to be close to 2,100 calories today.
Yeah, man, if you compare by what kind of, man, you've been pigging it down, you know?
Yeah, you've been pretty much shoveling it down for a long time.
Well, what do you mean shoveling it down, man? I've been, since a year ago, over a year ago, I have been doing my very best to take a look at what I'm eating, my weight, everything. I was exercising every day, and then I realized my diet. I had to do something about my diet.
Yeah, you started doing something about your diet. Now you're in exercise.
I'll start exercising, man, but this is what I figured out for myself. And people, everybody's different. I got to figure out what the hell it is I'm eating first. And when I figure out what the hell it is I'm eating, because I'm going to tell you something, folks. I actually saw the scene from This Is 40 that I'm in, which will be out sometime in the spring. And I told you, was doing ADR for the movie, and I liked the scene. I thought I was funny, and when I say that, believe me, I don't do that. When I look at myself, I'm a very, very critical guy, and I don't even like seeing myself on TV, and I don't like listening to myself on the radio, you know?
That's a good thing.
What's that supposed to mean?
You'd probably break down and cry.
That's real funny.
Just kidding.
Yeah. In any event, but I saw the scene from This Is 40. It was really funny. But let me tell you what, man. When you see this movie, you're going to be seeing one big dude up there on the screen. There's no question.
Yeah, they're probably going to need CinemaScope.
Real funny, man. Very, very funny, okay? CinemaScope? They don't even use that anymore.
You're going to have to use that big 76 millimeter.
Yeah, 76 millimeter.
76 millimeter, huh? You mean 76 millimeter?
Whatever.
You guys, you know, if you're going to give somebody crap, you ought to be able to speak English first. No, I looked at this scene. It's a very funny scene. It really is. But boy, am I fat in this scene. Thank you very much, Judd, for that nice profile shot. I'm kidding around. No, it was a lot of fun to watch it. But I'm a big guy, so I said I said very sheepishly to the people there when we were doing that ADR. I said, when this movie comes out, I'm going to be a lot skinnier. And they're looking at me like, yeah, it's sure. Anyway, so
yeah, right. They probably don't believe that.
I'm gonna make you a bet, man. I'll be 20 pounds lighter by the time the flick comes out. You mark my words. But in any event, what I'm trying to tell you is this. So with this Starbucks that I'm drinking right now, 339 calories, that pushes me over the 2,000 limit that I was trying to hold myself to 2,048 calories. Now, yesterday I did 2,129 calories. The day before, 1,920. And the day before that, 1,900 calories. Now, that is not a lot of calories. And yet, it seems like I could cut back more.
That one doctor told you about 1,500.
1,500, man. I don't know how anybody can live on 1,500. And yet, he said that that is for diabetics, 1,500 calories a day is pretty much, I mean, my doctor showed me a diet that he has that he gives to diabetics is 1,500 calories. And this 2,000 is one that I just picked out for myself.
How come?
Because I had been on this diet and I saw that the target calorie per day was 2,300 according to this one diet, and I wanted to just push it down to an even 2,000. So, I mean, the only thing that's pushed me over the limit this week are these freaking Starbucks. So if I get non-fat, man, it's a whole world of difference. Non-fat milk. The whole thing that makes these things so fattening is this damn whole milk. But, dude, even at that, you know, you get rid of the Starbucks. Do you realize, all you guys out there that are Starbucks addicts, all you people that are, you know, drinking your Starbucks, and believe me, I know where you're coming from. I'm into it, too. But, I mean, if you're trying to control weight and you're drinking that slop, and I say slop with the greatest of affection, it's
you're going to be a big, fat man, big, fat lady, that's for sure.
Yeah, man.
You will be big. Oh, yeah. But, you see, at least you got to get that non-fat stuff. So, today, just to give an example, God, man, 1, 2, 3 Starbucks. I had minestrone soup. Man, I had stuff, real low-cal stuff, man. And then here comes the Starbucks, and I'm over the limit. All right, we'll be back here at our News and Information Hour coming up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show, our News and Information Hour. Well, just a strange week, man. Strange everything. And it just so happens on this particular week, I've decided to begin my own version of a diet. See, in other words, I'm not doing Jenny Craig, and I'm not doing Larry Craig, and I'm not doing...
bunch of other guys are doing Larry Craig, though.
True, there's a bunch of other guys that are doing Larry... Will you shut up?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, funny. But I'm not doing any of that stuff, and I've just, after so many attempts, I've come up with my own, which is basically this. I'm limiting it to 2,000 calories a day. That's it, baby. And if I have to drop it down more, I will. And then commencing this weekend, we begin with the aerobic thing, like, you know, doing actual exercising.
You going to go out and do that polar bear club?
Polar bear club? What are you, nuts or something?
There ain't no polar bear club here.
It ain't that cold?
Oh, no, man. Going out into this water here, this is California. I'll tell you, it's cold enough. It's cold enough. This is what, March? You go out into that Pacific Ocean, you'll freeze it. It'll be like 2 ice cubes down there. Don't even worry about it. So, no, No, the polar bear. Are you talking about swimming?
Yeah, get out and do body surfing or something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're right, man. I mean, right out there, not, you know, 2 blocks away is the El Pacifico, man. I could jump into that sucker and go out and body surf every day and freeze myself to death, but I'd be a one hell of a good-looking body washed up on the shore. So anyway, world-famous Phil Henry Show, and of course our website, philhenryshow.com. Make sure that you head over there, get a backstage pass, and get involved in all of the things that we've got going on over there for you. For the price of a backstage pass, you get thousands of hours of audio, you get thousands of hours of audio to download, and you also get, of course, our daily video cast. There's a 5-day video cast archive. Our Saturday night shows that we did for a solid year locally here in Los Angeles. If you did not hear those or you didn't have an opportunity to see the video cast, you can see them now. All of those Saturday night shows are archived, including the video cast. So it's there at philhenryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. This is the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life. It's this Etch-a-Sketch thing.
What's that?
Do you guys know what an Etch-a-Sketch is?
Yeah, man, my niece has got one.
Damn, that's... No, kid, I know got one.
They still do Etch-a-Sketches. What are you talking about, bud?
That's an old-time toy.
They still got them, though. But this is the dumbest thing, and it's the desperation of this guy. I hate to sound like I'm beating up on Santorum, but every time he opens his yap, he does something or says something. Here's the thing that I think is very funny. Liberals are all over this guy. And they're all over him like they were all over Palin, you know? They were all over Palin, man, like cold on ice, you know?
Yeah, like, they're all over Palin, man, like they wanted to do it with her. What?
Just never mind. So, and when they did, you know, when they were bagging on Palin, oh my God, they were all over Palin. Like, these guys thought there was a real threat. Half of these cats that I talk to that I know who are like stone liberals, they're frightened of the wrong stuff. I mean, yeah, Santorum is a disaster, but this guy's not going to be president. He was never going to be president. The same way that Palin was never going to be president. That used to make me laugh until I was sick when I heard people talking about Palin this, Palin that, Palin something else. Oh, my God, Palin. She was never going to be president of anything, man. She wasn't even going to be president of her own neighborhood watch. Sarah Palin was an interesting person. She's a person that people like to listen to. She's got, if you're a conservative, opinions that you probably want to hear. She has great observations as a mother, as a former governor, all of those things. I'm sure she writes a hell of a great book. She's an interesting interview subject. There are things about her that I admire. I wouldn't vote for her, but that's, you know, no big aspersion on her character. But she was never, ever, ever going to be president of the United States. She had a very loyal, rabid, and enthusiastic base of followers. The same with Rick Santorum. The same with Newt Gingrich. When you are running for president, and you're making your way through that primary process, which is, as everybody knows, a process that is essentially supported by the real gung-ho extreme of each party. This is a long-standing fact. Everybody knows it, that the people that go out and vote in primaries are the real ideologically motivated, mostly radical members of a party. So that would mean in the Democratic Party, the real progressives, in the Republican Party, the real super conservatives. That's why guys like down through the years, you've had your right-wing candidate, man, who has, you know, been everybody's model in the Republican Party or all of the conservatives' model, and then you have your really progressive. It turns out that when Ronald Reagan got elected president, I think he was about the most extremely conservative guy they had in the party that year, because he was going up against George Bush and a few other guys. But I think that Ronald Reagan was the far right at that time. But at that particular time, far right didn't mean what it means today. At that particular time, far right meant cut the taxes and kick the commies, kick the crap out of the commies. Cut taxes, beat the living crap out of commies, beat up on unions. And that's it, man. Nobody said anything in those days about the religious right. Nothing.
What about abortion?
They never said a thing about abortion. Never. Ronald Reagan represented the most extremely conservative candidate I think that the Republican Party had that year, and there wasn't a peep out of anybody about abortion, about prayer, about this, about that, about something else. Conservatism back then was pretty much a Barry Goldwater thing, which was the following. You know, like I said, beat the hell out of commies, cut all those taxes back, don't let the unions get out of control. Tell the big federal government to stick it, you know, start anybody that's costing taxpayers a lot of money. So, and that was the message in 1980, man. That was the message. That was the message after not just 4 years of Jimmy Carter, don't worry about that, but 8 years of the Republicans, which included Richard Nixon. And Nixon was not Mr. Cut the Budget by a long shot. Because he had to deal with, you know, a Democratic Congress. And then you had all these Democrats like Johnson, Kennedy, and so forth. So along comes Ronald Reagan. And guess what happened in the 8 years that Ronald Reagan was president? Guess what happened? All of a sudden, guys started showing up at the White House. You know, it's almost like late nights a limousine would pull up. You know, and who gets out? Jerry Falwell. And
are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. Ronald Reagan was friends with Jerry Falwell, with Dobson, I don't know who else, but there was suddenly a lot of guys visiting, a lot of friends, a lot of the breaking of bread with these religious leaders who were decidedly conservative. That's when it began, and that's when you had the Ralph Reeds, and that's when you had, then all of a sudden by the late 80s came all of that crazy-ass stuff, the Wichita abortion clinic stuff, and you know,
but that was Ronald Reagan, not George Bush.
That was, I think, that was Daddy Bush when he came in, and then you had Pat Buchanan, and it suddenly became the Republicans had to, you know, offer up their arch conservative guy. But not since Ronald Reagan has an arch conservative guy been elected as a Republican president. George Bush is not that, and neither was his old man. The point that I'm making here is that Santorum ain't going to get it done. I'd be talking about Democrats, but they already got their guy.
Yeah, that guy, Obama, man, he's almost on the communist end.
Get out of your mind, man. You don't know what you're talking about, communists.
Well, he's like the most progresso of them.
Progresso's a soup.
Progresso's a soup, bud. What are you talking about?
What did you say?
Progressive.
Progressive, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing that nobody ever understands. The American people, for all of our experience with democracy, I got to tell you something. People, look at Obama. Everybody is holding to their line about Obama because they don't want to be wrong. And every day that they are holding to their line about Obama, they look dumber and dumber and dumber. Obama is... You know, all you had to do was look at him walking around with that Lincoln book under his arm. You knew who his hero was. It was Abraham Lincoln, a pragmatist, one of the greatest pragmatists that this country's ever had for president. This is an Obama that held on to the Patriot Act. This is an Obama that was good to his word. He went into Pakistan. You know, remember all the heat that he took when he said, if they don't act, we will? Everybody said, you don't know what you're talking about. Guess what, baby? This is an Obama that is trying to find a way to deal with the offshore drilling without pissing off all the progressives in his party. But at the same time, he sees the wisdom of at least moving that direction. But that's if you are objective and you're looking at this. But if you're one of these people that just wants to be right all the time instead of finding out what the hell's going on, then Obama's always going to be a commie. And I hate to break the news to these people that think Obama's a commie, but over on the other side, all of the people that supported Obama, now they're pissed off at him because they think he's Bush light, because they think, oh, yeah, this is now, they now consider themselves to be really, really edgy because they're criticizing Obama. And they're saying that he is going back on his word on Guantanamo, and he's going back on his word on Afghanistan, and the guy is Mr. Patriot Act, and the guy is Mr. Hardass, and the guy is Mr. This, and he just isn't the good, progressive that they... Presidents are supposed to be pragmatic. Presidents are not supposed to adhere to a political party's wish. Presidents are supposed to help the country and defend the Constitution.
Yeah, but what's the difference?
What's the difference? There's big difference. There's a big difference. difference is what's best for the country, not what's best for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. Good presidents, great presidents, become the guy that says, I'm doing what's best for this country. I don't give a damn what my party thinks. I'm president now. And this is about a country surviving. This isn't some jive-ass game we're playing now. So Obama gets in there, or Bush, or anybody else, they take a look at the inbox, and what do they see? All kinds of stuff that they never knew existed when they were out campaigning. And they got to deal with it. And they also have to deal with an American populace that is still back, mired in the Stone Age when it comes to what presidents are supposed to do.
You got to write a book.
Yeah, I think you should write a book. That'd be really good, man, because you're smart about stuff.
Write a book. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write a book on an Etch-A-Sketch here. That's what I was trying to get to, is this Etch-A-Sketch. And I didn't even get to the Etch-A-Sketch, which I wish you guys would remind me.
You got to do the Etch-A-Sketch.
I can't do it now. We got a break. We'll be right back. More with the Etch-A-Sketch coming up at the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Famous Bill Henry Show.
You know, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the results back from the coroner on the death of Whitney Houston. But just to make a very quick work of the Romney Etch-A-Sketch situation, it was simply that Romney's campaign manager, or one of his campaign people, said, well, when you get into the fall campaign, that is the campaign for the presidency, it's kind of like an Etch-A-Sketch. You shake it up and you start all over again. That was taken by Santorum and others to mean, oh, so you're taking your positions on different things and you're just changing them, which that's not what it meant. And only someone trying desperately to hang on to the spotlight, to hang on to some momentum, would say that. And that's Santorum. About as desperate a guy as you can get, man.
Man, you don't like that guy, do you?
What do you mean I don't like him?
You don't like Santorum on account of, because he's a Jesus freak and everything.
I didn't say that. I don't like the guy for president. I got nothing against the guy.
Guy got like 7 kids, man. You ought to have a little more pity on him.
Yeah, guy's got 7 kids.
I don't give a damn if he's got 7 kids. He got 7 kids, why don't he stay home and take care of them? How about that?
That's what a woman for.
Oh, is that what a woman's for? What a sexist.
Yeah, the ladies are going to call in on that one.
I don't care.
That's what a woman's for, huh? Take care of the kids. This is one of the problems we're having with this country, man. Guys with attitudes like that. The woman. She takes care of the kids. And the guys are out deadbeating it. Forget it.
I ain't talking about being a deadbeat.
Just forget it. Okay, we got Dr. Jim Sadler. He's going to join us from San Diego here as we talk about this, the culmination, if you will, or the... Well, the end of the road when it comes to the story of the passing of Whitney Houston. When I say the end of the road, it's not the end of the road of Whitney Houston's great legacy, but what exactly caused this girl's death? Dr. Jim Sadler with us. Dr. Sadler, how are you doing?
What did you say?
I'm sorry. I said, Dr. Sadler, how are you doing?
Yeah, because I when I first heard you say, Phil, Dr. Sadler, how do you do? So it sounded a little as if you drilled it out.
Dr. Sadler, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Phil. Yeah, Phil, Whitney Houston, according to the coroner's report, was a chronic cocaine user. We know this from reports of friends and family. But because of the chronic cocaine use, she did have the drug in her system when she drowned in that hotel bathtub. This is according to the Los Angeles County coroner, who released the autopsy findings that also noted that heart disease contributed to her death.
Okay, now the heart disease that contributed to her death...
Just can you hold on for a minute? Because there's an awful lot I got to get through here.
But I want to ask a question.
There's an awful lot that I got to get through. So, God, where was I?
You said Whitney Houston had...
Oh, yeah, I got it. Whitney Houston drowned in a bathtub, cocaine in her system, heart disease, yes, contributed to the death. Now, the disclosure, Phil, there was weeks of speculation, obviously, about what killed this girl. When they found her, and I don't know if you saw any of the reports right after, she was submerged in a bathtub at the hotel. It was ruled an accidental death. There was prescription medication found in the room. The police said there was no evidence of wrongdoing. Now, the chief of operations, Craig Harvey, he said cocaine and the byproduct were found in Houston's system.
What are the byproducts?
You still talking? I'm trying to...
Look, Dr. Sadler, this isn't the Dr. Sadler hour.
I know, but I'm trying to get through this.
You gotta get through it.
Hey, bud, shut up. Go in the other room.
I didn't do anything.
Go in the other room. I'm asking questions here, Dr. Sadler. Do you mind?
God. You know, I've been listening to you tonight, Phil, and you're screaming and yelling and everything.
I know Dr. Sadler, he was yelling at me, too.
You know, I gotta tell you...
Hold on for a minute. Get out of here, Robert.
Wait a minute, I don't...
Get out of here. Now your pals are gone.
What do you mean, my pals? I'm trying to give you the results of the coroner's report.
We're doing a radio show here. That means that I ask questions and you answer. It isn't the Dr. Sadler hour, and now he's going to just start rapping about all kinds of stuff.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it works.
Yes, you do. You've been on the show before.
I've been on the show before, but when I started to tell people about a report that I would have, you let me finish.
Are you crying now? Is that what you're doing?
You let me finish.
Dr. Sadler, continue, please.
The coroner's chief of operations, Craig Harvey, said cocaine and its byproducts was found in Houston's system. The drug was listed as a contributing factor in a death. He said the results indicated Houston was a chronic cocaine user. The toxicology results also showed Houston had marijuana, Xanax, the muscle relaxant Flexeril, and the allergy medication Benadryl in her system. Houston died hours before she was scheduled to appear, as you know, at the Clive Davis party. She also had heart disease.
Now, I want to ask a question.
All right.
The heart disease that she had was not created by the cocaine use, correct?
No. This is a condition that it can be genetically... she could be predisposed, I should say, to this kind of disease. It does run in the family's genes. It could have simply been the result of the kind of lifestyle that she lived. But you don't say, well, cocaine causes this kind of disease alone. She had blockage in her arteries. She was a 48-year-old woman. She did have a great deal of stress in her life. I don't know if she was a cigarette smoker or not. I suspect she was not as a singer. But you have to understand, this is a woman approaching middle age with a great deal of stress. Her diet probably was not the best. She looked like she was in relatively good shape, other than the fact that the night she died, she was, she looked out that she was had been drinking. And
well, she was dancing and sweating.
Right. And what is that? That's music. See, you interrupted me.
That's right. It's the music, and we're going to a break. Has he got a problem with that?
Yeah, I got a problem with that, because now I look like a horse's ass.
No, you don't look like a horse's ass. I can finish this up on the other side.
You're going to finish it up. You're not even a dog.
Get him out of here, the sniveling. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry. What is with that guy? World-famous Phil Hendry show.
You're yelling at everybody.
Tough.
All I wanted to do was finish.
Well, you don't get to.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here in our News and Information Hour. And I'm trying to find some kind of good news here. I mean, it's all just slop, man. It's all the same bad stuff. This cat in Afghanistan, this guy, this Bales, he's been charged with, I believe it's 17 counts of murder. And, they ought to hang him out to dry. I don't see any reason to have any compassion for that scum. And I'll tell you one other thing, man. And I don't, you know, maybe I said it before, and I'll say it again. I don't know how these guys, and I may be the dumbest guy in the room when I say this, but hey, how is it that we have men in the Army like that psychiatrist at Fort Hood, or this guy, or anybody in the United States Army? I don't give a good sweet damn what they do. How is it that we have these people and they're allowed to speak out against the government? They're allowed to speak out against military policy. They're allowed to campaign against certain. I don't understand that. I get it about free speech, okay? But if you are a part of an organization or some entity that has an express purpose that will be harmed by your actions, whatever they may be, then they either fire your ass or they tell you to cease and desist with the activities that you're involved in. And if you're a member of the Army, why is the Army exempt? I mean, we already know, because we've seen it time and time again, that while the Army has some of the bravest men and women in the history of this country who've gone to war and who have acquitted themselves with heroism, the likes of which we will rarely see in our lives, we also know that the Army has had criminality and just behavior that is, you can't even imagine it would come out of someone serving in the United States military. All kinds of criminality, all kinds of unseemly behavior, all kinds of activity and speech and attitude. These cats during the Iraq War is a good example of these guys. I look at folks. I get it. If you want to be a conscientious objector, I get that. I understand. If you're against war, that is your right. But no. Not after you join.
Yeah, that's the stupidest thing. Dude, guys, I think I'll be in the Army. Oh, you know what? I changed my mind.
Yeah. No. You don't get to do that. You know, I'm going to join the Army, and somebody was telling me this the other day. I don't know who the hell, but one of my friends said, well, you know, these kids, they join the Army because we are in this mindset now that even though the draft is long gone in American history, we still want to see people in the military as stupid individuals who were suckered into it. I mean, how much respect do we have for these kids anyway? It's the Cindy Sheehan's syndrome. Oh, my poor kid. He's a poor, manipulated kid. He volunteered, didn't he? Yeah, but, you know, he's kind of dumb. And this other dumbass, and this dumbass, and this dumbass. I should feel sorry for all of these guys, because all of a sudden, it occurred to them that they're wearing a U.S. Army uniform, and that means sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, you pick up a gun and you fire it at a guy in a different uniform. And how could they possibly know that that was going to happen? Yeah, you're right. What a con job, huh?
Yeah, man, it's like you join the Army, man. They wear a helmet and drive around in tanks. It ain't like they're out selling Girl Scout cookies.
Got that right.
Next time I see a Girl Scout in a tank, I'll let her know.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever, man.
You're not that funny.
All right, take it easy, okay, with you guys with the trying to top each other. So, what's the story here, man? Somebody give me an answer on this one, you know?
I don't know, man. I'm just saying that's your constitutional right.
Constitutional right? It's the United States Army. What do you mean constitutional right? Next thing you have a constitutional right, you want to get out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning. You want to sleep until 7. And this freaking, this Fort Hood psychiatrist, this guy, I can't in my wildest dreams, in my wildest hallucinations, in the words of my main man, Clint Eastwood, in my wildest and craziest hallucinations, I could never have fathomed a guy in the U.S. Army like that fruitcake. A guy that is in contact with terrorists. A guy that is actively, vocally campaigning against military policy. A guy that is talking and counseling young soldiers against orders that they may have, or directives, or Army doctrine. A guy that is allowed to do that. Allowed to. What the hell kind of an army is that?
I don't know, man. I think they're just allowed to do it.
Well, maybe somebody ought to say that they're not allowed to do it anymore. I don't care if it's an army, when you talk about the army of any country, it is the, if you will, the militia of the people. It's the big militia. It's the big one, baby. the standing army. When we talk about raising a standing army, we say we need the citizen now to take arms. We need, you know, all good men to come to the aid of their country and women to take up arms. And we make that a service that is possible for everybody. You have to be in pretty bad physical shape, psychological shape. There have to be a great many extenuating circumstances not to qualify you to serve your country in the United States Army. And I'm sure it's the same in most militaries. Now, the Marine Corps is a different story. The Navy, that's a whole other ball game. The Air Force, but the Army is the Army. And that's where everybody can go to serve their country in the military if they so desire. Like I said, if you qualify, and you've got to be pretty jacked up not to qualify.
But you got like one leg you can get in.
Oh, no, you got to get up on one leg, you idiot.
Well, I don't know.
They're not going to take you with one leg, bud. No. But the point is, it's a, it is, as I say, it is our. So I get that. I understand that. But it's a volunteer force. It's a volunteer force. Now, maybe what they're saying is we would not have the success recruiting soldiers that we have if we had all of these rules and regulations on speech and attitude. And I just don't, I don't understand that at all, man. Are you trying to tell me that you're gonna see recruitment drop to nothing if you keep some jackball from talking crap about the U.S. government, talking crap about the military, being in touch with cats overseas who are fomenting terror? Oh, well, you know why we dropped to zero in recruiting this month, Bob? Because we wouldn't let these kids talk to Nazis. Well, I don't get that one. You know.
Maybe I was going to need a Marine.
I don't know. You know, the way that warfare is evolving, and this is the truth, the way that warfare, the way that combat, the weapons of war are evolving to that point where units are smaller, even the weapons themselves are smaller, but the destructive potential is much, much greater. So a soldier, one soldier, is able to do more. He can kill more and destroy more than ever before. A smaller unit can do more than larger units might have done in past wars. And the weapons that have been developed, the body armor, for instance, remote robotics. We all know about the drones. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There are weapons, remote robotic weapons now that are used that are on land, on wheels or tracks that are remote controlled, that have all kinds of automatic weapon, all kinds of automatic firepower, can launch grenades. And these are things that a soldier controls from afar. The whole idea, of course, is not to expend lives. And so we are relying more and more on the technology and the robotics.
Yeah, you get the point, though, man. All that stuff's going to break down.
Well, you know, that you're making a good point. You know, if you rely too much on technology and the technology fails you, you're in a world of hurt, man, because you may not have the warm bodies that you need.
That'd be going to get the draft back on.
Well, it'll have to be a different America than the America that we're living in today. The draft is never going to work. Not today, not in 10 years, not in 20 years. The draft is done in America for the foreseeable future. If we ever have to bring the draft back, it'll be in a time and a place where everyone listening to my voice right now, and I mean everyone, will be long gone.
Are you kidding? I mean, that's a long time away.
You better believe it's a long time away. The only thing that'll bring the draft back in America is if we have a devastating war that almost wipes the country out, and people wake up and somehow decide, geez, I guess we're going to have to get some soldiers going here because the country almost, you know, we almost lost it. But I don't see that. I don't know. I just, you know.
What's that book you're reading?
The book I'm reading, George Friedman's book, and I recommend it to everybody. The Next 100 Years is a fantastic book. George Friedman is the founder of Stratfor, and I follow Stratfor at Twitter. And you can subscribe to Stratfor. It's an intelligence gathering organization like Debka, which is the Israeli version of Stratfor. And they were hacked, as you know, back in December. And Anonymous, they probably picked the wrong people to hack, because when they hacked Stratfor, they hacked a company that their specialty is intelligence. And it wasn't that they hacked him back in December. I think they hacked him before that. And shortly thereafter, they caught the guys that did it. But George Friedman's the founder of this organization, this company, and he's written a book called The Next 100 Years. It's a great read, man. It's not a bunch of sci-fi. It's not a bunch of jive-ass prophet, prognostication. It's sort of futurism based upon the logical reading of news and events. He draws this final conclusion. It's not a final conclusion, but he draws this conclusion. Now, you will not find anybody. You will not find anybody that will draw a similar conclusion. George Friedman says that the next 100 years will pretty much continue to be dominated by the United States, that Russia and China specifically will be in decline by the middle part of the century, if not sooner, and that our major competitor by the end of this century, by the end of the 21st century, the major power will be on our continent, and it'll be
Canada.
Nope.
Mexico?
Mexico.
Ha ha ha, yeah, right.
Go ahead and laugh, bud. But Mexico is paying some serious dues. And Mexico, like America, is geographically protected, and Mexico has the benefit of having the big brother to the north learning as they go, as if you will, kind of on-the-job training. And they, like I said, they're paying some serious freaking dues. They've got a lot of natural resources. They've got a really creative and energetic population. They've screwed up bad, but they're going to come through this, according to Friedman. They're going to come through it, and they're going to become a big-time competitor with the United States. So we can only wait and see. All right, we'll be back here with our final segment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here in our News and Information Hour. The Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com.
You're really intelligent, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, right.
Who is that guy anyway, bud?
I don't know, but the guy, he talks like he's from England.
No, man, he talks like an Australian.
No, I'll tell you what that accent is. It's a South African accent. That dude on the Stone Dine.
Yeah, the Stone Dine cookware. The guy's all going, you're nothing stickier than sticky cheese.
Yeah, it's Stone Dine. That cat, every time that commercial comes on, I get so hungry because he's cooking steaks.
Yeah, man, he like cooking up an egg and bacon.
Yeah, but you get that sticky cheese.
Yeah, I got your sticky cheese. Hackers block Mexico Pope visit sites. Well, that's some big game there, Anonymous. The hacker group Anonymous in Mexico crashed at least two of the websites for Pope Benedict's upcoming visit to Mexico on Thursday, claiming the papal visit is a political move to support the conservative National Action Party. Yeah, sure. Samuel, and that'll really stop the National Action Party now, won't it? Samuel Najera, spokesman for the Mexican Episcopal Conference, said its webpage on the papal visit was blocked by a cyber attack. We've been aware of the threat that's been making the rounds on social networks that was brought to fruition today. This is part of a dynamic these days of a lack of safety and acts of intolerance towards certain groups. For the moment, this does damage to the logistics of the papal visit. The site contained information on the Pope's planned activity starting Friday in the north central state of
Guantanamera.
Guantanamera?
Yeah.
No, it ain't. It's what do you mean Guantanamera? That's a song.
I thought that was what it is.
No, it isn't. It's
Bat Guano.
Get out of Bat Guano. Guana Yujado or some jazz. I don't know what it is. Guantanamera. The anonymous Ibero-America website, which has been a channel of communication for such hacker ops in the past, said the site crashes were the result of anonymous operations with names such as Pharisee, blah, blah, Freeloader, and so on. Anonymous Mexico said in a video posted on social media sites that the Pope's visit will cost Mexicans money that could be better spent on the poor and is meant to support the National Action Party in the July 1st presidential election. The candidate, Jose, whatever the hell, the candidate for the PAN party, the National Action Party, is trailing frontrunner Enrique Peña Nieto of the Institutional Revolutionary Party. Wait a minute. Which one are they supporting? For the Conservative National Action Party, Institutional Revolutionary Party. I don't know, man. I always thought that the Institutional Revolutionary Party was the old line party. The official campaign sessions start at the end of this month. The thing that's funny to me is Anonymous pretending like they have a political agenda. I mean, they don't really. What they want to do is just screw stuff up because they have the technology to screw stuff up, and then they think up the political reasons later.
No, they don't. I mean, thinking about this now.
Yeah, but if they thought this is not going to change anything, this is not going to change the people supporting one party or the other. You know, one of the things that they obviously don't understand, Anonymous in Mexico, and I don't even know if there is really such a thing as Anonymous Mexico. It seems to me like Anonymous is run mostly from, the United States, Europe, places like that, because the Mexican people are Catholic people. They're devoutly Catholic people. It's their thing. It's what they do on Sunday. They like it. The Pope, they dig, you know? So if Anonymous is trying to get the friendship of the Mexican people or get them to support whatever it is Anonymous thinks they're doing, and I don't think they know what it is they're doing. I think they just, like I said, we said this during the pre-show, the technology has outpaced people's ability to think in a critical way. The technology has outpaced our ability to be creative. The technology, frankly, has outpaced our intelligence, our ability to grasp more complex issues than just how to play chess. You know, what is the best way for our world to unfold? What's the best government? What's the best political philosophy? These are all things that take a little bit of sitting down and thinking about. There's no computer that's going to help you do that. There's no nothing's going to help you do that. It's your own experience in life and your own belief system. And Anonymous is typical of a lot of people these days. Lots and lots of technology, lots and lots of ways to deliver things, lots and lots of dishes and Wi-Fi and all of that, and nothing to say. They ain't got anything to say. And if they really had spent any time analyzing the problem, whatever it is they think the problem is, they'd realize that attacking the Pope and the Catholic Church attacks the peasant people of Mexico. That's what it is. You're attacking, you know, the peasants of Mexico. They ain't got a whole, and when I say peasant, I mean peasant. I mean folks that are living off the land, you know, people that are really, really the salt of the earth, more so than anybody you ever met in America. And that's not a diss on America. I'm just talking about how really bare to the bone people live in Mexico. So these are people that go, wow, the Pope's coming. You know, it's a little change of pace. It's something that they dig. They get to see the Holy Father. They get to go to a really cool looking festivals, and there's food, and there's this big church, and it's cool for them. And what does Anonymous do? Because they're so stupid, they go and they try to screw it all up, and they say they're doing it in the name of the Mexican people. You guys ought to get a grip. But that's what happens when your ability to sit down at a computer and mess stuff up goes beyond your ability to think critically about these things. I maintain that Anonymous is nothing more than a highly evolved clubhouse in a tree. Girls not allowed. Throwing water balloons from a car. You know, peeing your name on somebody's lawn. That's Anonymous. Only they have all of this technology. They have all of these computers. They have all of this internet. They can do so much more. But really all they're doing is a high-tech version of throwing a water balloon at somebody in a car. All right.
That's pretty intelligent, Mr. Henry.
Thank you very much. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. And, of course, we're online at philhenryshow.com for all of your Phil Henry Show needs. Don't forget, we'll see you tomorrow night, same time, same station, same everything, baby, for another version of the Phil Henry Show. And sign up for a backstage pass and get a look at our live streaming video of the show, as well as our video and audio archives. Till tonight, peace out. We love you. Bud, take it away.
The Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan...
Northcraft.
Northcraft.
Never mind.
Never mind.
Phil Hendry.